Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Happy Hour here on 92.9 WBPM.
We have Jonna Spilbor, we have Carol Pesci, I am Frankenberry, and we've got another show in order for you, and it's going to be a good one, I am sure.
Aren't they all?
They are.
That's why you're so sure.
I do declare they are all very good. Happy Sunday morning, everyone. Can I start with a quick little update from last week?
Sure.
Small little update. Well, do you guys remember how we talked about how me and my much younger significant other were on
the poison cookies and got your faces acided?
Yes.
Right. And we came across the poison cookies. Well, as it happened, remember I told you my much younger significant other got a bag of them?
Yeah. And you both agreed not to eat them, and he admitted he ate one. After the fact.
Well, that's what I was going to tell you.
Oh, I blew it. Oh,
he actually did. He actually admitted that he ate a cookie afterwards, and he lived. So I just want to say, if anybody, maybe this person or this company or whoever is going to continue to give out these free cookies on the rail trail here in Dutchess County, you don't have to be afraid. Unless that's part of the plan.
Part of the plan.
Now, right. for the people listening who would love to get some free cookies, where on the rail trail can they get, if they're still available, the free cookies?
I will tell you where they are. You'd have to enter the rail trail. You have to enter the rail trail off 376 near Summerlin Plaza. I guess, would you call that Hopewellish? The Hopewellish area,
I'm not sure.
Hopewell, it's that convergence there. And it is not, and you have to head, I guess, south. My directions are so ridiculous. But you have to head away from Poughkeepsie, and you will happen upon the cookie factory. The Keebler Elves, a short ways down the trail in that direction. Just look for a bench with a sign that entices you to walk through the woods alone to the cookie factory, and you're in the right place.
And you'll live. If you approach, you won't get your face acided off. And if you eat a cookie, like said the younger boyfriend did, you will survive.
And Jonna is unwittingly helping along the plan, where they have lured people in with non-deadly cookies. And now Jonna, courtesy of a radio show, has implored people to now go get possibly the evil cookies.
I am an accomplice.
You are.
An unwitting accomplice. Anyway, so something else I wanted to talk to you about, because we touched on this before, and it's something that really annoys the heck out of me. And I know that it's not
that many things do.
Well, right? I mean, because I'm so easygoing.
Yeah, exactly. That's why this is such a surprise.
I really am. And I realize this probably doesn't affect a lot of people every day, but if you are in the real estate business, and I will say that right now, if you are in the real estate business, you're probably very busy because, a lot of people during pandemic, post-pandemic are moving out of the city or now moving back to the city and they're moving. So you're busy and you're probably doing great and good on you. I have a suggestion, though, if you are in the real estate industry. And that's this. So I just for fun, now I don't like to admit this because I know realtors don't like to take people around and show them homes just for fun. Like, you got to be a serious buyer. But, I was looking around the Manhattan real estate because I wanted to see, what is available out there. I'm curious. And so I was going around with a realtor, pardon me, and no fewer than 75% of the places that I was looking at required that I remove my shoes before entering.
I believe it.
Now, I got to ask, why? Number one, okay, first of all, if this is really going to be a thing, if you're so hoity-toity that you're selling your home, so you don't want to be there anymore, but the general public can't come in for 5 minutes wearing the same shoes that they're wearing in their own homes, okay, whatever. But I think you should put that in the listing. And here's why. Here's why. And it's not just because, like, well, what if I didn't have a perfectly pedicured, you know, tootsies that day, for starters? Okay. But what if you don't want to walk around barefoot in somebody else's home?
Big point.
For a variety of reasons, right? You don't want your bare feet touching somebody else's floor. You don't know what they do. Oof. So it's a two-way street. And and we had talked about this, like, if that's going to be a requirement, either A, put it in the listing so you can come prepared, or B, the booties.
Yep, I was just going to say that, yeah.
The booties should be just like hand sanitizer in the pandemic. You can't go anywhere without getting smacked in the face with a hand sanitizer dispenser. Booty dispensers all over.
Jonna, I hate to tell you this, but booty dispenser, that can be taken any number of ways. Or at least one other way that sounds very, very strange.
Jonna, you just found your next marketing giveaway chachka. Jonna Spilbore branded booties.
Booties.
No more martini glasses, no more letter openers.
Booties. And I think, how come? Why is it so hard? And what would happen? I kind of thought about saying on one of these tours, no. And, you know, either don't let me in, or, you know, what's going to happen if I come trotting in with my shoes on? You know, hardwood floors, it's not like it's a carpet or, you know, it's hardwood floors. Like, please. Am I the only one?
No, and I was going to say, you know, what you mentioned earlier, especially if it is carpet. Hey, I ain't walking around with my bare feet. I don't know what you guys do on the carpet, weirdos.
I mean, really? And plus, it's like trying to power pose or negotiate real barefoot
when you're 4'9".
That's right.
And you've been faking it with 6-inch heels your whole life. It's really deflating.
You know, at first I'm like, oh, she's being dramatic about it. But the point you make is valid. I'll never forget the first time I went through an airport when I wasn't prepared. And I think it might have been like Mexico. Mm. And they were like, oh, take your shoes off. And I had like, I didn't have socks on. I looked at them like, I got a what? I had to take my shoes off and walk barefoot where 10,000 other people just did. I got to do what?
Right.
Oh, I was so angry. I couldn't do anything about it. I was like, oh, is it possible to walk just on my big toes? Oh my God.
Just on your heels. I always try to do just on my heels.
it's a good point. It really is a good point.
And then if you add, so listen, this is a PSA for the months to come, because if you're shopping for properties in the winter, because I had this happen to me too, and you're not prepared, then here's what happens. You don't just get to kick off your flip-flops and go walking around somebody else's space in your bare feet. You got to sit your butt on the floor in the hallway or on the stoop, unzip your winter boots, unzip your other winter boot, stretch them off your legs like with two hands, and then do that again. And then you have to wait while everybody watches you do the opposite when you're done looking around. It's just, stop it, people. If you're selling your home, have somebody clean every time you have people come over if you're that afraid of it. I mean, for the love of God. Do you guys remember the episode of Sex in the City? You probably don't, but I've seen every episode like a bazillion times. And there's an episode where Carrie Bradshaw is invited to a party in a Manhattan apartment, and everybody at the party must take their shoes off because whatever, whether it's cleanliness, whether kids do crawl around on the floor, I don't know. She takes her Manolo Blahniks off at the front door. And when it's time to leave, her Manolos ain't there. Okay.
Oh, I do remember that one.
Right. And oftentimes when you're touring these apartments, you've got to leave your shoes unattended in the hallway. Now, I ask you, that is a crime waiting to happen.
Well, let's see. Okay, so let's pause here for a second and get a little more detail. If it were Frankenberry's shoes or my shoes, it would certainly be no more than a misdemeanor.
Good point.
If it were a pair of your shoes, what's the criteria for grand larceny? What's the dollar amount?
Over $1,000.
Grand larceny.
Could be. Could be.
Grand larceny, first degree grand larceny.
So, Johnny, you have to do this. You need to make a John Spielberg booty dispenser that has John Spielberg branded booties and your business card. So if their shoes get stolen on the tour, they can call you to sue.
Jonna.
Boom.
You know what she just did, don't you?
Drop the mic. What'd she do?
She did another Carol genius moment. Another brilliant Carol line. Brilliant idea.
You're good.
Is it possible? Is it even possible for her to have any more? Like, hasn't she exhausted her brilliant idea quota?
No. I'm a factory.
Yeah, apparently so.
Can I please just try to top the brilliant idea?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. How about this? What about this? How about if to teach the real estate industry a lesson? Okay. Collective. Like, we all have to get on the same page here. Okay. Since they're not going to warn us when you have to take your shoes off, and they're not going to provide their own booties, whenever somebody makes an appointment to go look at a property, you arrive at the property wearing gigantic clown shoes, like flippity floppy, flippity floppy, flippity floppy, right? Right? Big, gigantic clown shoes. And then the realtor is going to be like, why are you wearing clown shoes? And you're like, well, I might have to take them off in the hallway. And this is a good strategy. So nobody decides to take them. They're giant clown shoes. Who's going to want them?
Well, I would steal the giant clown shoes. I'm not stealing your heels, but I'm stealing the giant clown shoes, for God's sake.
Holy cow, how could you
turn that down?
The other thing you could do, Jonna, when you're outside and they're like, okay, you're going to take your shoes off. Okay, you know what? I'm going to take them off right now. And I'm going to start doing circles on this dirty sidewalk. Bum, bum, bum. And then I'm going to go up and down these stairs a few times in my bare feet. Okay, let's go in.
All right, now, Jonna, I have one question for you.
Yes.
Now, take it back to the beginning, to the very origins of you going on these tours of people's places.
Okay.
Why are you going on these tours? Are you interested in possibly purchasing this place, or are you just more of a voyeur?
Hang on. I'm going to answer this. Can I answer this?
Go ahead.
Frankenberry.
Yeah.
She's going to buy herself a beater Manhattan apartment.
you suck, Carol. She's going to drive her beater Beamer down to someday.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I want to slum it, you know, somewhere around Park Avenue.
Okay, go.
That Jonna, always bringing it down and living with the peasants, the normal folk.
Go ahead. Didn't mean to distract you.
Darn, you beat me to it. That was a good one. That was a really good one. So, yeah, I was going to say all this shopping around. I just, you know, curious about what the prices are in the city these days. And maybe I am a little distracted by the real estate market. So isn't it fitting that we are talking to an expert in distraction today? Coming up after the break, we are going to be speaking with a really smart dude by the name of Nir Eyal. He is the author of, among other things, Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life. And you know why Frankenberry is going to really like this guy, Carol? You know why?
Why?
Because he didn't put three additional details in the title of his book. He kept it down to two. He didn't want to be distracted by the infamous third.
Yeah, Frankenberry loves long taglines.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. I love those subtitles.
He cut it. He cut it by a third. So when we come back from the break, you're going to love this guy. You're going to love the book. We're going to be speaking with Nir Eyal, author of Indistractable.
All right. That sounds good. That is what we have on the way. Jonas Philbor, Carol Pesci, and myself, we will return with our guest, and you're listening to Happy Hour.
This is 92.9 WBPM. Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour here. Jonna Spielborg, Carol Pesci, and myself. And segment number two, of course, is when we get to our esteemed guest. And Jonna will talk all about the esteemed part right now.
Well, esteemed is very, very appropriate today. So on the line with us, we have Nir Eyal. He is a writer, a consultant, and a teacher who writes about the intersection of, this is so interesting, the intersection of psychology, technology, and business. He's the author of two best-selling books. The first is called Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. And the one we're going to be talking about today is Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life. Indistractable has been named one of the best business leadership books of the year by Amazon. You might have heard of Amazon. And one of the best personal development books of the year by Audible. Nir's writing has been featured in the New York Times, the Harvard Business Review, Time Magazine, and Psychology Today. Just a couple of little rags you may have heard of. Nir attended the Stanford Graduate School of Business and Emory University and is the creator of a fabulous website, which is entitled nearandfar.com. I love that play on words. Nir, welcome to Happy Hour.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
And it's great to have you. And I know you don't know much about Carol and I, but we are separately reading Indistractable. Both are loving it.
Yes.
And part of the shtick of this show is that Carol is notorious for always getting our guests to say, "Oh, Carol, that's a brilliant question," all the time.
True story.
I am notorious for asking the really dumb stuff. And I actually am going to start off with a really dumb question for you.
Start the bar low.
Here's what, and I'll give you the premise so people can put this in context. I'm enjoying Indistractable very much. And in the book, which we're going to talk about, you describe a lot of things that are distractions and ways to stop doing that or overcome them. And as you describe these things, I say to myself, distraction? I don't look at that as a distraction. I look at that as a necessity. So that got me thinking, can we all define distraction the same way? So why don't we begin with, what is the definition of distraction?
That is a brilliant question.
Stop it. Cut his mic.
That's a great question. That's such a great question. Let me tell you why that's such a great question. Because it is one of those things that everybody thinks they understand and almost nobody does. And I certainly did. When I started my research on this topic of distraction, I thought I knew what distraction was. But if you really want to test someone to see if they know what a word means, try and ask them what is the opposite of that term. What's the antonym? So let's take distraction. Most people, if you say, hey, what's the opposite of distraction? Easy. It's focus, right? I don't want to be distracted. I want to be focused. They're opposites, right? Wrong. The opposite of distraction is not focus. The opposite of distraction, if you look at the origin of the word, the opposite of distraction is traction. Both words come from the same Latin root, trahare, which means to pull, and they both end in the same six letters, A-C-T-I-O-N, that spells action, reminding us that distraction is not something that happens to us. It is an action we take. So traction, by definition, is any action that pulls you towards what you said you were going to do, things you do with intent, things that move you closer to your values and help you become the kind of person you want to become. The opposite of traction is distraction. Distraction is any action that pulls you further away from your values, further away from becoming the kind of person you want to become, further away from doing the things you do with intent. So this is actually super important because of two reasons. Number one, anything can become a distraction. You know, I used to come to work, sit at my desk and I'd say, okay, I've got that big important project I got to get to work on. I'm going to get started right now. I'm not going to get distracted. I'm not going to procrastinate. Here I go. But first, let me check some email. Right? let me just do that easy thing on my to-do list. And I kept getting distracted because I wasn't doing the thing I said I was going to do. So just because it's worky doesn't mean it's not a distraction. So many people these days are running real fast in the wrong direction. They're doing work that feels like work, but it's not. It's still a distraction. And conversely, anything can be traction. So don't listen to these people who say, oh, video games are melting your brains and social media is bad for you, blah, blah, blah. It's ridiculous. Anything you want to do with your time, as long as it's done with intent, according to your values and your schedule, it's traction. There's nothing wrong with it. Enjoy it, as long as you do it on your schedule and according to your values.
That was one of the lines that I read and loved and appreciated as well, was if intended wasted time is not wasted time. I'm not sure if I'm getting that. I'm paraphrasing that a bit. But if that's the key. If you do it with intent and awareness, right, it's fine, whatever it is.
That's right. That's right. And so we shouldn't moralize and medicalize. You know, we hear this a lot these days that, you know, oh, this type of behavior is bad. Social media is bad. YouTube is bad. Reddit is bad. All these things that are new, different, and digital are bad. And society has always done this. We always have these moral panics. You know, we always think if you look back from the comic book to the bicycle to radio, television, all of these technologies, people freaked out about and said, oh, it's melting your brain. It's such a distraction. It's so bad for you. And of course, what happened? Well, society adapted. We learned from it. And then the next thing came along that we had another moral panic about. And so it's very important to realize that, like we were saying earlier, these tools are great. They're wonderful. I mean, can you imagine trying to get through this pandemic without these technologies? It would be so much worse. We need to make sure we can get the best of these tools without letting them get the best of us. So I'm not anti-tech or pro-tech. I am for traction rather than distraction.
Nir, is there a way, and again, this is probably going to be another stupid question, but a real stupid question this time. How can people identify when they are distracted versus what you just talked about, when we're doing things that we want to be doing, but they're not really serving a purpose except maybe allowing us to relax or take our mind off something? How do we know when we are being distracted versus when we are intending to do
something?
All right,
I'm going to step in here and say, my friend, that's a really good question.
Yes, you're two for two here. This is
nicely done, Squidward.
Well, I'm ahead. Okay.
This is fantastic. So the only way to know is to plan ahead, right? So the rule is you cannot call something a distraction unless you know what you got distracted from. I have worked with thousands of people over the years. So I've researched this topic for over a decade. And I can't tell you how many people come and see me and say, I'm so distracted. I can't get things done, you know, with what's happening in the news today. And did you see what happened on Twitter? And my boss wants this and my kids want that. And I say, wait. What did you get distracted from exactly?
Ooh.
And people say, well, look at my to-do list. I have 100 things on my to-do list. I said, no, that's not what I asked. I said, what did you get distracted from? Show me your calendar.
Wow.
And if I can't see on your calendar how you wanted to spend your time, you have no right to say you got distracted, because what did you get distracted from? Everything is a distraction unless you know what you plan to do with your time. And that time can be planned to be with your kids, to meditate, to pray, to watch TV, to play video games. I don't care. But do it with intent, because if you wait till the last minute, they're going to get you. Right? If you wait till the cigarette is in your hand, you're going to smoke it. If you wait till the chocolate cake is on the fork on the way to your mouth, you're going to eat it. If you wake up next to your cell phone every morning, you're going to check it before you even say hello to your loved ones, because these things are persuasive. They are enticing. They are tempting. And if you wait till the last moment, they're going to get you. You will lose. So you have to plan ahead. You have to take steps today to prevent getting distracted tomorrow.
Okay, so that leads us to a really good point here. Let's talk about what principles you discuss in Indistractable, which techniques that people can employ so that they can better achieve their goals. And that's what, you just made an aha moment for me. Like, I never put I never calendar what I want to do. Sometimes I make lists, but the list can go on and on and on for days, and I don't hold myself accountable. So let's talk about how to become indistractable.
Yeah. So great. So we have these this kind of number line almost of to the right is traction, to the left is distraction, right? So you can visualize that in your brain. Now what I want you to do is to think of two arrows pointing to the middle of that line, bisecting it. So we've got we have internal triggers and external triggers. External triggers are the usual suspects, the pings, the dings, the rings. This is what people tend to blame for their distractions, the things outside themselves. But studies find that is only 10% of the time we get distracted. Did you know that 10% of the time you check your phone, you're checking it because of some ping, ding, or ring? So what's the other 90%? The other 90% of the time, and studies have shown this, the 90% of the time you check your phone, you're not checking your phone because of some beep or boop. You are checking your phone because of an internal trigger. What is an internal trigger? An internal trigger is an uncomfortable emotional state that you seek to escape from. Boredom, loneliness, fatigue, uncertainty, anxiety, stress. It's these feelings that we are trying to escape. This is 90% of the time that we get distracted. And so it has to be the first place to start, because here's a takeaway. Time management requires pain management. Time management requires pain management. It doesn't matter what tips and tricks and life hacks I can tell you. If first and foremost, we don't deal with this fact that we are looking to escape discomfort with distraction, it's not a moral failing. Procrastination doesn't mean anything's wrong with you. You're not broken. You don't need some pill to fix you. All you need is a way to deal with discomfort in a healthy way that leads you towards traction rather than distraction. So step number one is to master the internal triggers. And there's lots of techniques to do that. There's dozens of them that I describe in the book Indistractable. The second step is to make time for traction. We have to use this technique, time boxing, and recognize that some of the worst productivity advice out there is to run your life on a to-do list. People don't realize running your life on a to-do list is awful for your productivity. It literally is like it's shooting yourself in the foot from a productivity perspective. We want to move from a to-do list, which has all kinds of problems with it, namely that it has no constraints. You can add more and more and more to your to-do list, and then you get this terrible feeling every day that you didn't finish. Well, of course you didn't finish. Not because you're doing anything wrong. It's that the technique is wrong. So as opposed to running your life on a to-do list, you want to run your life on a calendar, on a schedule. That's the only way we can live according to our values, by turning our values into time. That's step number two.
Wow.
Step number three is hacking back the external triggers. So this is where we get really practical into how do we hack back our phones, our computers, meetings. Oh my gosh, how many stupid meetings are we called into that are a complete distraction? Emails. How many emails do we get and send every day that are a complete distraction? You know, when many of us are working from home, our kids can be a distraction. So we go systematically one by one how we can hack back all those external triggers. And then finally, the fourth and final step is to prevent distraction with pacts. And pacts are where we erect a firewall, where we have some kind of barrier, a line of last defense, so that if the other three techniques let us down, we have this last line of defense to make sure we don't get distracted by making what's called a pre-commitment. So that's the four steps.
This is so brilliant. It's one of those things where it's so obvious once you put it into words, Nir. And one of the biggest things here for me, my aha here is when you say distractions, mm-hmm. My first initial thought is things around me that I've allowed to, or either, you know, things around me. The fact that there are internal distractions as well, I think, is the missing link for many people of not being more productive and not feeling more accomplished in the areas that they want to.
Yes. And it is two things. One, it is the overwhelming majority of the triggers that lead us to distraction are these internal triggers. 90% studies find. And two, it's the ones we want to deal with the least. It's the icky, squishy, my feelings. I have to think about what I'm feeling. It's so much easier to say, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, it's the television, it's the modern world these days. That's the reason I'm distracted. But let me tell you, whether it's too much news, too much booze, too much football, too much Facebook, you will always find distraction somewhere unless we start with those uncomfortable emotional states. Now, I'm not saying go see a psychotherapist. That's not necessarily something everyone has to do. There are some very simple techniques that anyone can use in about 10 minutes. I can teach you how to use these techniques to help you deal with these uncomfortable emotional states in a healthy way, as opposed to trying to escape them in a harmful way.
This is so intriguing to me. I almost feel like I want to say, let's end this interview so I can keep reading.
Well, I don't want to distract you from reading the book. So.
No. It's all good. This is phenomenal. I get such a sense inside of me that this could be such a missing link for people who know that they're intelligent, who know that they're skilled, who know that they're driven and they work hard, but they've got all these variables that are positive. And yet they look back and say, well, then why am I not getting the results? This could be it.
Yeah. You know, it's fascinating. My 5 years of research and writing this book, which, by the way, I took me 5 years to write this book because I kept getting distracted. Okay. I wrote this book. I want to be very clear. I wrote this book for me. Okay. I was just about the most distracted person you'd ever met. And it was because I was succeeding. It was because my first book did well that now I started, all of a sudden, people called me for consulting engagement and speaking gigs. And, you know, I had all these new demands on my time, and that I got so busy, I found I couldn't keep doing the one thing that had made me successful, the writing. And I kept procrastinating and delaying and getting distracted from doing the one thing, not only that I love, but was essential for my career to progress. And so that's why I said, you know, I really have to figure this out. I have to figure out why I keep getting distracted. So that's why it took me 5 years, because I was struggling with this more than anyone. And so it's a very personal account. I'm not, you know, some professor who's telling everybody advice that they're not following. I wrote this book for me more than anyone else. And not only is the book backed with, you know, things that I know for a fact have worked for me and my thousands of clients over the years, but also it's backed by over 30 pages of citations to peer-reviewed studies. So it's really good science as well.
Okay, so my question for you is, I know that this is profound. I cannot wait to read the rest of the book. For an individual, an adult, but how they can apply it to their life to enhance their relationships, their productivity, their fulfillment, their happiness, their careers. A parent is listening right now and is concerned about how their child is so externally distracted. Do you have a starting point? And I'm sure this is an evolved topic, but a starting point, a piece of advice for a parent.
Yes. Okay. So there's a whole section in the book titled How to Raise Indistractable Kids.
Ah.
And to me, as a father of a 12-year-old who loves technology, this is, I think, you know, one of the most important sections in the book, because if you think the world is distracting now, just wait a few years. Yeah. The world that our children will inherit will only be more distracting, right? Technology is not going the other way with augmented reality and virtual reality and who knows what other reality. It's only going to become more difficult to sustain your attention and focus. And this will be the defining skill of their generation. It already is with our generation. It's going to be even more important for their generation, because there will be a bifurcation between people who allow their time and attention and their lives to be manipulated by others, and people who stand up and say, no, I decide how I will control my time and attention because I am indistractable. So we have got to teach our kids how to become indistractable. How do we do that? First and foremost, the best piece of advice I can give you, the best starting point, is that we as parents must become indistractable ourselves. You cannot give advice that you are not taking. And because kids come with what we call a hypocrisy detection device. I don't know if you knew this. They all come pre-installed with these little invisible antennas, and kids are always scanning around to see where they can call you out on being a hypocrite. So I see this all the time. You know, I have parents who come to me and say, oh, my kid is addicted to video games. Meanwhile, they're checking their email on their phone while they're telling me this. So that's the first step, is to set the example. And then, of course, we follow the exact same model with our children, teaching them the four steps of the indistractable model.
You know, you just answered one of the questions that I was going to ask you, Nir, because I struggle with this, obviously, myself, especially I own a business. And then there are side hustles that I never seem to get to, but I'm convinced are the key to my happiness. And one of the things that the question I was going to ask you is, how do you set about, like when I'm at my office sometimes, I can never maintain what I need to do because people are constantly knocking on the door, asking questions, things come up. And so my resolution to that was, well, I'm just going to take one day off and not be in the office each week. Well, when I do that, then I'm in my email even more than I usually am. And I'm in my text even more than I usually am. So I screw the whole thing up. But I think you're right. I have to set boundaries. And that means really set boundaries wherever I am. Would you agree?
Yeah. So step one is mastering those internal triggers. And this is where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. It's asking yourself, wait a minute, why is it that I can't stay focused on what I said I was going to do and I feel compelled to check email, right? What is that uncomfortable sensation that I'm escaping? It's probably anxiety or stress or uncertainty. There's something going on psychologically that we are looking to escape from. And so that's the most important place to start is when you feel that itch, when you feel that urge, that temptation to go check email, when you said you were going to work on that other big project, what is that uncomfortable state? And how will you deal with it in the future to not let yourself succumb to that distraction? So that's the most important thing you can do. And there's some very easy techniques anyone can use to do that. Then the next step, of course, is to plan the time. So there's nothing wrong with checking email. You know, that's part of your job. The problem is that people use email as an emotional pacifier, right? When I don't feel like doing that big project, let me just check email real quick, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, guilty.
Yeah, all of us do that, right? So unless we plan time for it in our day where we, and I show you in the book, by the way, how to reduce your email load by up to 90%. There's some very simple techniques that people can use to reduce the amount of email they get and spend time on. But that has to be planned. Just like an appointment, just like a meeting in your schedule, that time for email has to have a fixed time in your day so that you can have time for all the other stuff. Your job is not just email, right? We call that reactive work. Reactive work is reacting to emails, reacting to Slack notifications, reacting to phone calls, reacting to taps on the shoulder. Some of your day has to be spent doing that. The problem is most people spend their entire day doing that and they leave no time for what we call reflective work. Reflective work is the kind of work that can only be done without distraction. Thinking, being creative, planning, strategizing. You can't do that if you're interrupted every 5 minutes. You have to do that in a focused, indistractable manner. And so in order to have that time to be reflective, you have to plan for it or it's just not going to happen.
I love this. And I absolutely do. Nir, we could talk to you forever, but I'm going to suggest to our listeners that pick up Indistractable, because even if you don't realize that you are distracted, this book is really, it really is. It's eye-opening and the techniques are something that you can easily do. It's not, you know, you're not going to have to take college classes to learn how to do these. You can easily do these. Pick up Indistractable. We've been talking with Nir Eyal. You are fascinating and an amazing speaker, and we really, really appreciate this. If people want to connect with you, Nir, what's the best way for them to do it?
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. So the book is called Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life. And that's available wherever books are sold. And if you go to my website, it's called nearandfar.com, but near is spelled like my first name. So that's nearandfar.com. There's actually an 80-page complimentary workbook there that we couldn't fit into the final edition of the book. So we decided to give it out for free on my website. And that'll start you on your journey to becoming indistractable. And again, that's free.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Near and Far, nearandfar.com. Nir Eyal, it's been wonderful talking to you. Thanks very much for being on Happy Hour.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us today. Much appreciated. You're listening to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilvore and Carol Pesci. And we're not quite done yet. We'll be back, so please stick around.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
And welcome back one more time to Happy Hour here this morning with Jonna Spilvore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frank and Barry.
Oh, nicely done. Nicely done.
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead, Jonna. Say it.
Nailed it.
God, that makes me laugh. I don't know why.
So Nir is my new favorite person.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
He's an amazing smart guy. And go easy with the information. I love when it ain't over my head.
Right. Yeah. No. And I really feel strongly about what I said, where someone could be listening, and I'm one of those someones where I believe I'm intelligent and capable and driven and have a lot of positive qualities, and yet don't accomplish as much as I would like. And I feel very strongly that understanding how distractions affect us. And it's the aha for me, one of the ahas, was that it's not just the things around you. We can't control our environment. We're a victim of circumstance, but 90% of our distractions are internal distractions. And understanding that this could be the key to somebody really advancing and accomplishing a lot more of what they want to. I loved it.
Oh, I think it absolutely is. And if you can put the pedal to the metal and actually employ some of his strategies, I'm going to say this, there's no way you can fail if you just do what he's telling you to do. And they're not that hard. And one little totally side note, when we were as our audience knows right now, we're still recording the show from three different places from our own. We're not in studio together. And as he was speaking, I was talking about distractions. I was looking out my window from my house, and there was this gigantic eagle fishing in the river, and it was all. And now that's a distraction that I think I could be forgiven for. I just couldn't take my eyes off it. So you might have heard me a couple times go, but then I got back into the conversation. That was just amazing. But he did say, if you intend to focus on, for example, an eagle, or you intend to focus on your book or your, you know, downtime or whatever, that's not a distraction. That's a traction.
Right.
So
it's about knowing what it is you want to accomplish and then making the choices with intention. There's nothing wrong with laying on the couch and binge watching something. I mean, if you did that every day, all day long, yeah, something's wrong with that. But if you intend that Tuesday night is my night and I'm gonna watch TV without guilt for 2 hours, nothing wrong with that.
So let me ask you guys something, because we all are in businesses and have lives where I'm sure a lot of people communicate with us individually via text, and we communicate with each other via text.
Yes,
quite often, right? It's one of my preferred methods of communication. And I want to ask you this. So recently I've started, or let me back up. Prior to now, if somebody sent me a text.
Prior to this second.
Right. If someone sent me a text, I typically would feel compelled to respond right away for two reasons. Number one is, it's like somebody walking up to you in the street and saying something to you. If you just walked away and ignored them, you'd be considered rude, right? But on the other hand, if I don't respond right away, I have a tendency to back burner it to the point of, by the time I'm ready to respond, kind of the point is moot, so to speak. But more recently, when somebody sends me a text that does not require an immediate response, I've been putting off responding until I'm darn good and ready. And I can't quite decide whether that's good or bad. What say you two?
I think you got to put boundaries and controls on it, and that's what he was talking about, that we live in a reactive state, and that's giving your power away.
And don't you wish, or maybe you don't, I kind of wish texting would sort of have come with a little door knocker, because it is quite a bit of an interruption. Like if I get texted in the middle of the day, in the middle of the week by a client who could easily call the office and say, hey, when is a good time to chat with her? It, like, I could be in the middle of another consultation or doing something else, and then it comes in, and then I feel guilty, then I have to make the time. And it can be a distraction, all of that. Well,
okay. So number one, that's on you. From two standpoints, when I know I want to be focused and not distracted, I'll flip. My phone is always on silent, unless like Craig's traveling or I'm expecting him or a family member or something. My phone's on silent, number one. But flip your phone over so you don't see it, so you don't have that opportunity until it's you choose it's time to say, okay, who wants to communicate with me? Number one. And number two, that's up to you to say, here's my preferred method of communication. If you have an emergency and it's urgent, you need to get me as soon as possible, by all means, text or call myself. But otherwise, communicate via email. That's setting a boundary. That's up to you, or whatever your preferred method is.
It's a lot less intrusive, the email.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know. I can't quite figure out why that is. I mean, because I have email on my phone, just like I have text on my phone, but it just feels a lot less urgent, you know, or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I mean, you could do what I do, and you could say, just limit the number of friends you have. You know, or you can do the other thing that I do and just get very good at speed typing. Sorry, late back.
So every text
I respond to, sorry, late back. And then you go on.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
I use that one a lot.
We sort of train our friends, right? Like I know, my friends know that they're going to get a fairly quick response from me when they text because they've been trained. You know, and I know that if I text my dad, for example, it could be days. Like, I could see him before he responds to my text.
I see it as our attention and our focus is a very valuable resource. Mm-hmm. And it's not being rude, it's being intelligent to set boundaries on how that gets it gets pulled on and by whom.
Yes.
I've gotten a lot better at saying no, or, you know, this is my, give an example, my neighbor who I love was having some, we didn't even get into this, some paving work done today, but wanted to talk to me first thing this morning, like 7:30, had a question. I figured it was urgent, and I have a routine in the morning after Craig goes to work, and I have my quiet time and meditate, that it ain't happening tonight, by the way. Coffee, I read, I sit with Ginger. It's very quiet. It's how I start my day. It's very, very important to me. And it is rare that I will allow something to interrupt that. And I'm okay with that. And he called and said, can you talk? And I figured it was urgent. And I went out and I love him. Don't get me wrong. And got talking. And you know what? It wasn't really urgent.
Never is.
And so I had no problem saying, he's like, all right, do you want to go measure it now? And I'm like, nope. I'll catch you later. It's my routine thing. And he knows I love him, and it doesn't, you know, it's just people understand. And when you regularly reinforce that, as an example, we've talked about this before, that Sunday is Craig and our family day. Like, we do not make plans on Sunday, and our family and friends know that now. So they stop asking. And it's just up to us that, you know, we're kind of crossing topics here. We had Terry Cole on a few weeks ago about the Boundary Boss author. But yeah, if you don't control what gets your attention, who's going to?
I hear a cat
yeah. too.
Yeah. That's speaking of boundaries, Cricket doesn't know what they are.
Oh, well, animals get a pass. Frankenberry's working from home today.
Yeah, it's actually kind of nice. And I have... Excuse me. There you go, girlfriend. I have all the gang sitting around me as they always do when I'm at the computer. But Cricket woke up just a little while ago. So that was Cricket doing the meowing.
Aw.
She's better now. She's on my lap. But you were right about the whole boundaries thing. And then, you know, I've gotten pretty good at that. You know, I think people have gotten to the point where they understand that I'm pretty much going to say no a lot. So they just don't ask anymore, which is fine with me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? That was a loaded. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Spielberg.
No. I'm recognizing all these things, and everything that you guys are saying is correct. And I think the little exasperated sigh you just heard is that I know me, and it's going to take forever for me to turn that ship around.
I'm not sure it will, because I expect you're going to read his book or listen to it. That
I'm in the middle.
Yeah. And that's going to be, I think it'll be helpful.
Yeah, I do. Sometimes it is very liberating to just kind of figuratively have people talk to the hand and not feel guilty about it.
That's the thing, right?
Yeah, that's the big thing.
His book will definitely help. I really enjoyed listening to him today. He's a marvelous speaker and a cool guy. Yeah. And I don't think we didn't talk about this, but he was coming to us. He's in Asia at the moment. Yeah. So he was coming to us from quite a bit of a time difference. And we really appreciate that
Does he live there now or was he traveling?
I did not ask. I have a feeling it's kind of permanent. You know, when we were coordinating for him to be a guest on our show. So very cool.
Yes, he was definitely very cool. So anyway, I think, ladies, I think we're probably good here.
All right. So for people tuning in, our guest today was fantastic. If you're not accomplishing as much as you'd like, if you're feeling more anxiety and stress than you wish you did, if you're concerned about your kids and their addiction to their devices and smartphones and so on, check out Indistractable. What's the tagline there, John? I know it's on the shorter side, by Nir Eyal. Absolutely brilliant.
Yes, it's Indistractable, how to control your attention and choose your life.
Yeah, love it.
Yep, and then he has a website that is near, N-I-R, and far.com.
Right. Very clever. Nir is his name, N-I-R, and far.com. And I'm going to stalk him on Instagram as well. So that's a wrap, kids.
That is a wrap. So thank you very much to Nir for joining us today. And for Jonna Spillmore and Carol Pesci, I'm Frankenberry. Thank you all for joining us as well. And we will talk to you all again next Sunday,
8 o'clock, right here on 92.9 WBPM. Have a good week. You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spillmore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 92.9WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.